Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Miami, home to sun, sand, water, plus books, new ideas, author conversations, and the Miami Book Fair, the nation's largest gathering of readers and writers of all ages. Mark your calendar for the 38th edition of the Miami Book Fair, Sunday to Sunday, November 14th to the 21st, bringing together the greatest thinkers of our time, in person and virtually, talking about the issues of the day with audiences of all ages. Join the conversations about sci-fi, the environment, American politics, and world history. Participating will be authors with new fiction, nonfiction, memoir, and essays. Chris Matthews, Channing Tatum, Alan Cumming, James Patterson, and Twilight's Marissa Meyer, too. All this and more at the 38th edition of the Miami Book Fair, November 14th to the 21st, 2021. All coming together for 1 week, in person and online. Do join us. More information at miamibookfaironline.com. Or follow us at Miami Book Fair.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 21st of October, 2021. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And Dave, welcome to another week of, it's not like a lot happened this week. Quick up programming announcement. We were going to have on a guest, Steve Weidelman from Weidelman Consulting. He's sick today. He wasn't able to make it on. We had a lot to talk about, but we don't need no sticking guests here. We can get through this stuff because there was a lot that happened, from Facebook weirdness to would there be clarity from Google? And don't you hate it when that happens, when you write this huge long article on something and then like 2 weeks later they go and change it?
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago in Search Engine Journal, Dave wrote a long article on the effect of the Quality Raters Guide, the Google Quality Raters Guide. And it must have been so frustrating on Friday to to announce that they were making big changes to it.
Yeah, that's always fun. And on the plus side, I think we just have to face that, like, in SEO, we're just kind of used to that, right? Like, and I just wrote this article, and then there's a Google update. And like, I've had updates happen between writing and publishing. So like, where it's like, oh, well, I guess I have to rewrite that part and then tell them to not push that out or something like that. So, at least this one, it had its short little lifespan, and now I've got to revisit it and rewrite it. So, so yeah, I mean, it, but at the same time, it's it, it, every time they update it, it's just a little more light. And to our conversation previously, talking about it, that they update it so frequently, that they have all of these people. Folks, it's an important document. Nope, no signals involved in there, but they put a lot of resources into it. So it's an important document for us to understand what they're looking for.
Yep. And now there's going to be a lot of talk about how sweeping the changes. Actually, the changes weren't sweeping, but every time they do make a change, it shows a change of not necessarily a change of intent, but I don't know. I think it shows a little bit more clarity about how Google itself looks at things. And that look is sometimes right about now feels like it's often narrowing in topical focus, eh? Like they really want to hone in on stuff and want it well defined.
Yeah, and it makes sense. One of the big for listeners who might not have read it, and quite honestly, I have not read the updated document. I've only read the analysis of the updated document. I will, obviously, but I haven't had a chance to yet because, oh, you know, work needs to be done. Thankfully, sometimes you can just go, do I trust people like Barry Schwartz to tell us what actually, you know, to a good trustworthy source? I do. So one of the core areas that was in there was the expansion of your money, your life sort of category, which that I found very telling and very interesting. And it expanded to include groups, people subcategory, basically targeting in on discrimination, really. Where they're actually like highlighting. And I don't know how it's written in there. And that's my problem. I don't know how they've written it in to be, you know, how are they grading this?
I can't tell you the grading, but I can tell you exactly what the document says.
Right.
Got it right in front of me.
Can anybody argue that a classification of this thing should be as grading by, you know, the quality of a website, you know, does it discriminate on people? Now, I know that you could easily come in, and I can see cases where like we'll be dealing with edge cases of things that will sort of get blurry, you know, where it isn't a like hard and fast sort of rule from a quality rater's standpoint. From your ethical standpoint, you'll have hard lines. I'll have my hard lines. Everybody has their hard line, but from a quality rate where you're having to look at things and go, okay, this is a actual scientific journal that might make this claim or that claim that actually relates to gender or something. I think they'll get a bit blurry there, but
I think this exact, your exact example speaks to the role of the quality rater and what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
See, those decisions aren't made by quality raters. They're made algorithmically, at least right. as you and I will see it. That's Google search users, right?
Right.
And what the quality raters are doing is assessing Google's, basically the QA people are assessing Google's assessment. They're not assessing the websites so that those websites will change in ranking immediately based on what the QA assessor sees. They're assessing how Google is looking at the website. And, you know, you're right, there's going to be edge cases. And in some cases, there's going to be quality assurance persons who disagree with each other right. about the exact same example. And that's why they have thousands and thousands of them.
Yeah.
So over thousands of samplings, you get a pretty good median average, eh?
Well, indeed. And you can see the importance, like just going back to that example of going, where we do have these thousands, that is incredibly important. And how is Google supposed to learn that in this document when you say, I'm just going to make like probably a really bad example, but if massive studies came out and it said that in this task, women are inherently better than men at this specific thing, how like, but it's a scientific, like a large trustable source that just happens to make this claim that the way they're wired, this happens to be that. How can you distinguish that algorithmically from something that is just anecdotal and actually sexist in nature to make those claims. And I think that's where this importance of these people and their roles come in, is going, there is a difference, but you just look at the words in order, you might not be able to tell as a bot. You might not be able to tell that one of them is actually a trustable source with actual scientific data, and one of them is just somebody shooting their mouth off.
Well, indeed. I mean, this is why, and this is something that you could, I think people could debate for years to come, what Google means by this. But Google is telling its, instructing its quality assurance evaluators to delve into the research, looking at the reputation of the website that that content's on, and if they can, if possible, the creator of that content. That was an interesting passage, a new passage in the guideline. What do you think about that?
I obviously like it. You know, I mean, should you be considering the source? Of course you should, right? Like, especially when we're dealing with expertise, authority, trust. Like, should we want those people to dig deep into sort of what the source of a subject is or an opinion is?
Yeah. Now, it's probably important to note that just because Google says it wants its quality assurance evaluators to dig deeper into the reputation doesn't mean that Google is following the exact same paths QA people will. Mm-hmm. Now, Google and John Mueller from Google has gone out of his way. It's been explicitly said, give us author bios.
Right.
And he said so because he wants to make it easier, or I should say Google wants to make it easier for page visitors, Google users, to judge the accuracy of content based on, is this an author I trust or not? Doesn't mean that Google is trolling into the author bio for anything but entity information. You know, doesn't right. that the little bio or the trusted author doesn't mean you're going to rank better.
Right.
But it does mean you're providing a better user experience because you're probably giving better information. And you're letting the user have an opportunity to decide, hey, I know Joe Blow and he's a great author. I love that guy's work.
Right. There's so many signals that get it involved here that just make sense. And you know, it relates by the author, but Lily put out a great piece. I think it was on, I know it was on Search Engine Journal, but it was about a week ago, talking about how to use schema, and authorship did come into this. How to use schema to sort of, it's funny because she actually said there is no EAT score in an article she published earlier today. I'm going to use EAT score anyway, just as like a shorthand for going like basically ways to prove your expertise, authority, and trustworthiness.
Sure, the boxes and she published getting it. Ticked.
Exactly. Going, okay. Like, I know there isn't a score, but I sort of liken it to like, I know there is a page rank score. I don't know what it is, but I know that I'm somehow being graded on this thing. And so I could liken it to a score, even though I have no idea what it is, that it sort of operates in a black box at this point. Anyway, she had published a piece, I believe it was about a week ago, maybe up to two, but I read it in the last few days, talking about how to do that with schema and how to send these additional signals across relating to authorship and very, very similar metrics, and going, okay, you have a good trustable source. You have this trustable source writing for you, for example. Push that, right?
Like, goodness sake, absolutely.
And
also,
sure that's clear.
Also, you're doing a great mitzvah for that author. Yeah. You're doing a wonderful mitzvah for that author. You're helping identify her, he, or they with their entity blocks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, now we're just checking all the boxes, aren't we? Was that element of going like, okay, and this is this author, and they are the same as this. They went to this school, right? Like, this is what they've done. This is their profession, right? Like, basically providing all of that information. Can you tell what I've been diving into? Because it's important, and I'll come back with some tests that I'm running right now on a large scale profile. Segment. But we're going to be basically following this and going, what happens if we check all of those boxes? Because we have
literally hundreds of authors writing for the site that are very, very strong, you know, Stanford and those sorts of things. So we'll see what happens. But I suspect it'll be strong based on everything that because Lily's not an idiot, and also from things that John has said as well. And you're right. This all circles back to expertise, authority, and trust, and something we keep talking about, letting Google know that.
Okay, now, here's a weird one. I was about to say, you can never go wrong by providing too much information to Google. However, the way you provide that information might screw Google up a little bit and get them cross with you. Mm-hmm. I just went through an exercise where I had to remove a gajillion internal links from a page to make the user flow tolerable. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to give out too much information that way, you're probably diluting the value of that very page. But in an author bio, that's not a big deal. But that author bio probably wasn't going to rank anyway.
Yeah.
So link away. Give 100 links out of it to different places that author may be associated with. It honestly probably will help.
Yeah.
Yay. So check out the new changes. You know who you really got to check out? Like the canon reading on any change to the Quality Raters Guide is Jennifer Slegg.
Yeah.
If she has covered the Quality Raters Guide since I think they first introduced it, like back in like 2012 or something. And, you know, I wrote the other day, all other scholars should definitely have input on this, but she kind of owns the field.
Yeah, I think she has like a bat phone that calls Gary Ives or something to ask him questions. I don't know, but she seems to always have like an inside scoop and a depth of sort of information on them that is you're right, because she's been doing it forever. That is incredibly strong. So,
and the honest truth, if Google owes anybody out there, you know, you could count people from the old guard and like whether they owe Google or Google owes them. And I'd say Jennifer Slegg is one of the people Google owes them for just, you know, massively popularizing the AdWords program. You know, where you put ads on your site and drew revenue from it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. AdSense program. Anyway, check out the changes to the quality Raters Guide. Other changes, they define what low quality content is, talk about page structure a lot. They simplify a number of definitions. So in case you're wondering what Google might mean by this, it's easier to understand, but again, more honing in on topical relevancy. They're really telling their quality assurance people to look at signs of life on a page, typos, spelling mistakes, good layout, stuff like that is important to them. And believe it, they're telling their people to look for it. So it's kind of like going back to middle school again, eh?
Yeah, that's a fun way to think of it.
I think so. Okay, what else do we got? I mean, Quality Raters Guide was a big deal, but I think an even bigger deal about the way the web is perceived and used is Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, Facebook is the web. Remember when the web used to be whatever you typed into the address bar and it took you there,
right?
Or whatever Google. Now Facebook has, you know, walled garden environment that we all sort of live in, and it's been a really hard few months for Facebook on the PR front. Been exposed doing some pretty nasty things. And I'm torn between wanting to reiterate those nasty things because they are so nasty.
Yeah.
Or just letting the audience, who's very well informed, you know, they know those nasty things. So what do you do when you're in a pickle like this, when the regulators are breathing down your neck and even your like right hand, Sheryl Sandberg, avoids your phone calls because she only has bad news for you anyway? Like, what do? You do the smart thing. You rebrand. You start calling yourself a new name. My name's George. That guy over there, that Mark guy, I don't know him. I'm George. Yeah, well, he was a dick, but I'm George. I'm good.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think it's a bit more complicated than that, but you can excuse people from drawing that from the story, eh? So Facebook is rebranding. It's going to call itself a new name. Doesn't know what it's going to call itself yet. And what do you think?
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. There's a bit of like gray sitting in there. So I don't know how this is going to be playing out and whether that actually functionally impacts regular users. Like, how often do I say, you know what, when I'd like to do search, I head over to Alphabet, right? Like, no, but that is the parent company of the search engine that I use most of the time, but I never think of them that way, right? It's Google, what's one of the biggest tech companies in the world? Google. Nope. It's Alphabet, right? Like, we think of it. So will this really change functionally any that we all sort of think about?
Well, actually, in this case, very possibly. And I'm saying that because Facebook is going to rebrand. Probably Alphabet is a great example because it's probably exactly what Facebook is doing. It's dividing its business from its properties. Dividing its business end of things from the properties like Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp. The regulators are breathing down its neck. Mm-hmm. Facebook knows it's causing harm to the country and to communities in the country. It knows that. There's no question about it. And it's likely to be held to account for election interference in the future. There's, again, Congress wants to talk to it about it. And after the information released by the whistleblower a couple of weeks ago, it would just be easier if a different company did all that stuff in the future. But also, and this isn't Mark Zuckerberg blowing steam or trying to pull a fake here. I think this is for real. The internet is about to undergo a fundamental shift. It's going to go from the 2D environment that we live in now to a 3D virtual environment that I don't know when that's going to happen, but there's no question it's going to happen. And Facebook wants to be out in the very front of this. And I mean, honest to God, Facebook is freaking boring when you think of what the metaverse is going to be. And so you can't call yourself Facebook. That's not inspiring. Right. It's MetaBook. You know?
You do bring up a good point because of the scope of what they do, like which we know about. Like you don't think Facebook, Oculus, right? Like but they are, you know, and the breadth that they sort of have into different spaces. I think you bring up some very, very interesting points. I am looking forward to the official announcement because I think part and parcel with that will be. And here's the other exciting things that are coming to Facebook, right? Like it's actually the right after that statement, I suspect they'll be going into the explanation of why, but probably wrapped in a, and here's what's coming, right? And very, very, there'll probably be some, you know, it'll be like a Google I/O conference, right? Like it probably will be a very interesting push, but I suspect where Google I/O, we end up talking about MUM and Lambda and things like that after those. I suspect in this one, we'll be talking about devices and formats, to your point, right? Like that we're going to be talking about the broader scope. And it really is, and you, I think, alluded to that, it is Facebook's to lose. When most people wake up in the morning, do they pick up their phone and click a great big G and go, I've been wondering all night about this, and then run some miscellaneous query, or do they click an F and open up to see what their friends are doing?
When Google had, there was a while there, I think it was 2008, maybe pre-2008, where Google was giving you a customized home screen. I was actually opening to Google then. I really was, because I got my news and I got stock information, found out that the Leafs had lost again. and I got all the information I needed right there.
Let's be honest, you didn't need to be told the Leafs lost again.
No, it was just an assumption, but you know, it verified the assumption. So just like with most things in the morning, it made me happy. And then we're just like, and that was a precursor to Facebook, of course, because that's what all Facebook does is verify your assumptions.
Right.
It doesn't give you fresh news. It gives you stuff based on what you think is right.
Right. which is why they're changing their name and rebranding to begin with.
This is an important thing, and it's not too late to get in on this, folks. We're often too late to get in on all the fun, but Facebook doesn't know what it wants to call itself yet. And so there's plenty of time to tell Mark what you think he should call his new product, baby, or whatever. Face palm, face plant. I don't know. I can't say that, but F face. Lots of stuff you could call it.
Bodie McBoatface.
Bodie McBoatface, sure. Screwy McFacebook, whatever. Throw it up on Twitter, throw it up on, well, you can, Facebook, but let Mark know what he should call his new product. I think it's a patriotic duty. Okay. Switching gears a little bit, if you've been getting the sense that there's been a lot of algorithmic action lately, like the algorithms are aping climate change and just ramping up and getting crazier and crazier and crazier, you'd be right. SEMrush released a report the other day. I'm sorry, SEMrush.
No, you can stick with SEMrush. I approve.
Know. I'm scared of Ulka. Yeah, indeed. There's a lightning bolt that's about to crash down from the Nordic heavens. Like, seriously. You say SEMrush, I'll say SEMrush. We'll see who lives longer. The important thing is they released a study. And the study suggests that Google's rate of messing with stuff is way up.
I can speak anecdotally on this and go, heck yeah. I mean, just by like, I mean, you know, we monitor a bunch of sites, obviously, but not, I mean, this is SEMrush, right? Like, I don't know another company that would be as qualified to sort of make note of this because of the volume of search queries that they're constantly monitoring and the scope of countries that they're monitoring in.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
But yeah, it 100%. Like, just the number of core updates we had in the summer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the frequency of like these massive updates through like a fairly quiet month. Like, we usually have core updates every 6 or 9 months, and we were getting like a couple, like back to back, in like a month long period of time. So yeah.
So Morty Oberstein over at SEMrush posted a tweet where he shows, based on desktop and mobile action, the number of days, the percentage of number of days where there's been high volatility in search rankings, mm-hmm, on desktop. In 2020. 25%, 26.46% of the days in 2020, there was a high volatility in the search rankings, mm-hmm, on desktop. In 2021, 44.58% of the days of 2021 were days where you were clenching your stomach on around desktop results, volatility happening. In mobile, in 2020, about 27% of the days of 2020, there was a lot of action happening a lot of volatility happening. In 2021, just under 49.99% of the days, so about half the number of days in this year, search rankings have been up and down and up and down. Yeah. So if you've been feeling, and so they're a little more extreme too. They're the results are a little more outlandish or noticeable, because most algorithm updates you don't even notice, right?
Yeah.
These ones people are noticing. There's not just volatility, but extreme volatility. And again, half the days of the year, that I just find that phenomenal.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess we should expect this. And we've talked, regular listeners will remember, probably not that it actually happened, because Jim, that's how old we are. But we've talked on this show before about the Google dances. Remember mm-hmm. when days of high search volatility was 10 in a year? Like, you'd have like every 4 to 6 weeks, you'd have your like day, and McDar would go like nutty with like, mm-hmm. it's like you'd be watching it and seeing the different data centers, and then it would settle down and you'd, well, okay, now we're done and wait another. I think what we're seeing here, because we can't simply be dealing in this volume with a bunch of engineers. I know they have a bunch of very, very strong, very capable engineers, but they're not doing manual changes that much. So we have to be seeing machine learning algorithms kicking in. And I think this ties to the core updates that we were seeing in the summer.
Well, yeah, and just let's remember. I mean, I still think 50% of the days of the year of being volatile is phenomenal. But let's remember, in August we had 5 algorithm updates, 2 of which were core updates, bookending a number of things happening in between. We had the most certain introduction of Core Web Values. You can see on some sites in your analytics the week Core Web Values was introduced, because for some sites that had crappy user experiences, that's the week when you see impressions suddenly tank out. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
These things happened. Like it's right there in Search Console. And this has been this is the year of transition for Google. Eh? They're doing stuff differently this year.
Yeah, and I mean, great. What I'm going to find interesting though is that, fundamentally, I have to think, and I could very well be wrong, because people are moving targets, right? Like, especially me, because I keep calling it SEMrush. But, what I want today is different than what I will want tomorrow. But I think about volatility in search and go, there should be a stable. Like, for most periods of time, for the Dave of now versus the Dave until he's frantically doing last minute Christmas shopping, but then the Dave in January and onward after that is more or less the same Dave, right? Like, more or less, my wants and needs might change a bit, but what I'm going to view as good in a result will more or less be fairly stable. So I have to think that after these things shake up, things should settle. Like, yes, we're introducing new tech that's highly refining what good is, but I have to think that eventually it has to settle down to where we're dealing with smaller refinements. Still a lot of changes on the fly, constant changing. But once we've sort of done the triage, right, and managed to get all of the systems built in and making things better all at once, there should come a point, should come a point where, okay, now they're just fine tuning. They understand what Dave wants and understands what good is today, and it will be roughly the same tomorrow. So we don't need to update it as aggressively.
Now, the moment they do that, Zuckerberg's going to introduce the metaverse, and they'll have to go back to day zero trying to figure out what's what again.
Yeah, well, indeed.
And I mean, that actually has been a very real it's almost like a push me pull you sort of thing with Google. Google comes up with ways to deal with new technologies, often by pushing us into treating those technologies the way they want them treated. Mm-hmm. Like, Google's reaction to mobile was to study it for a while and then declare, we're going to go mobile first, and here's how we want you to do it.
Right.
And if you don't do it this way, all your desktop stuff, you're going to lose all your desktop stuff.
Right.
Knowing full well that business to business is all desktop. So we're going to conform to your mobile rules.
Right.
Google looking several years ahead to create the web it wants, it wants or will need. And then of course they're doing that. They're like Google is like Walmart when it comes to purchasing. They use their massive heft to get the smaller players, read us, to do what they need us to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get like, I get it. Except the difference is like, at least at Walmart, they still have to pay for stuff. Google's just like, do this. And we all do. they're not even paying us to do it. They're just like, just do it because we said so. At the same time, understanding the enormous task they have of trying to index and keep control and like monitor so many people going in so many different directions with so many different types of sites and so many different needs is highly challenging. Like they have a very, very difficult job. So I do understand, and they generally tend to be pretty good at giving us big warning shots across the bow, them occasionally going, all right, kids, we need y'all to do this thing. Like all of you need to do it now because it's make our lives a lot easier.
Well, I'm going to take it a little step further. Google pushes us around and they tell us you got to do this now. Absolutely. But also there's the spokesperson, the quad spokespersons, Danny Sullivan and John Mueller and Martin Splitt and Gary Ives are some more clarity than others, of course, but are, I think, more than any other time in Google's history, even heresy as this might sound, even during the Matt Cutts era, I think Google is giving us more insights into how it works, how it operates, and what it needs from us as webmasters than it ever has before. Case in point, have you seen the new Jason Bernard Duda webinar video with Martin Splitt?
I have not. I have read about some of the coverage, but I have not had a chance to watch the video.
First thing, what Jason's doing with these videos is of great service to the SEO industry. There's no other way to put it. This is just a gift to SEOs bringing this content out. But in the latest video, which is a really good breakdown over at Search Engine, Roger Monty gives it a really good breakdown over at Search Engine Journal. Martin Splitt, he's pretty sure they've talked about this, so it's okay to talk about it out loud, which means it's going to be okay to talk about it out loud because he's a pretty smart guy. How Google will look at content, primarily on a page, but also in relation to a site, and determine topic. But the cool thing is how it separates and what it does with other sections that don't necessarily relate to the main content. It's called centerpiece annotation. And if we had a commercial break to go to, we'd leave you hanging on it because it's a really cool cliffhanger. Centerpiece annotation. You're going to hear this phrase used a lot in the future. It's a googly term. It doesn't mean exactly what it says, but once you hear it, you'll get what it means. The center is the core of the information. What the page is about. So, say the page is about blue widgets. Okay. All the content that relates to blue widgets is the centerpiece. But there may be other kinds of content. You're the stuff you put up in the navigation, the stuff you put down in the footer, and that'll be common to every page. That has very little to do with the topic of blue widgets itself. So that's a form of secondary content, tertiary content. Stuff that means almost nothing to Google in relation to your main content, to the center piece content. And this is the neat thing. And I'm not sure how I feel about this. And maybe I heard wrong and maybe I'm interpreting wrong. So when Martin said we take, he used a dog food comparison. We've determined that this page is about dog food, but there's a little bit about bicycles at the bottom. Bicycles got nothing to do with dog food, so we ignore the bicycle stuff, and we just concentrate on the dog food stuff. I understand that. I believe that, but doesn't that run contrary to something that they had said just recently about being able to have multiple topics on a page?
I
that's the one thing that confused me.
And Google's really funny like that, because I think the way they would answer that, I think they would, is go, yes, you can have multiple topics on a page if those multiple topics are all answering the intent of that one user, in which case all of those topics are main content. They all were required to serve this purpose. I think that's a very, so it depends. Is I think how they would answer that. What I find interesting about this announcement, and that it timed so nicely with their updating of the Quality Raters guideline, is it is in the Quality Raters guidelines. They call it main content. They go basically, look at everything that answers that user's intent. That's your main content. Take all of your advertising. That's a content type. Everything else is secondary. Right? It's a pretty easy way to do that. And it's totally right. It's like, take what answers the query, take out the advertising, everything else is secondary content, navigation, recommended reading, right? Like that sort of thing, right? To what you were talking about earlier. So I find it interesting that he's talking about it here. I like the term he's using a lot better, centerpiece annotation. What a wonderful way to word that, as opposed to like main content, because main content actually is a little more vague. It's defined in the guidelines, so it's much clearer what it is. But I think centerpiece, yeah, we all know, and it's usually actually in the center. So that works.
If anyone out there wants to catch up on this video, go over to Search Engine Journal. Roger Monty's, I think it's the last piece he published. So it was only a few hours ago. So front and center. And just type Jason Bernard into Google and you're bound to find it. Yeah. But again, these webinars that Jason's putting up, they're going to become not literary canon, but they will become canon in the industry moving forward.
I love also, and I'm sure he does too, that you said just search Jason Bernard, and I'm sure it's there, because I hear that guy knows a thing or two about brand SERPs. I hear indeed a little bit.
Well, he does face a problem, right? There's only so much room on the front page of Google. What are you gonna do?
Can't keep stacking stuff in there.
You're making a problem for yourself there, Jason. Okay, what else we got here? What did you think about Biggity Index's big joint announcement? Index now.
Oh yeah. I went. And if Google gets in there. if I was managing mass brands, though, like if I was the SEO at Amazon, where just that extra split second, it might only be 3% of the search traffic we get. I don't know what, you know, Bing's percentage of Amazon traffic is, but let's say 3%. The extra half an hour of potential sales that you would get by getting indexed just a little bit faster, getting indexed now, could lend itself very, very nicely to high profits. I think for most webmasters, though, not so much, but it'll end up just getting baked into most CMSs anyway.
Yeah.
And so there you go. Like, it'll just be there for you. And hopefully Google does get in there, because I think the current mechanisms are a little clunky.
They are. I mean, most CMSs have sitemaps that update nightly.
Yeah.
You're informing Google almost all the time. You're informing Bing almost all the time.
Yeah.
Don't know if you're informing Yandex almost all the time, right, but you could be with Index now.
Indeed. But if you're a major publisher, for example, 24 hours is a long time, right? Like for a news story. So, and those are who I'm thinking of here. Or if you're e-commerce, but like, it's Boxing Day, right? Or it's Black Friday. Like, you need that sale price, or you need this update pushed. So I do like the idea, but the fact that the largest engine isn't in there and is still going to be relying on, hopefully we crawl it in time, right?
Well, I mean, there are other instant ways to feed your data to Google. Google Shopping, for instance, gets like nearly instant product feed of instant product information updates out there.
Absolutely. And something like I use it often, and I'm sure most of our listeners do, but just a reminder, if you do have a cornerstone piece of content, you're like, this is important, I just published this, it needs to be indexed right now, you can submit it through Google Search Console. You can request indexing. It takes a couple minutes because they have to verify the page, and then you request indexing. It doesn't say it'll be instantaneous, but it prioritizes it for the next time they're going through your site to index. So it will make it the next thing.
That gets indexed. Usually I found on well-crawled sites, you're looking at about 5 minutes or so, but it can take a couple hours if your site is not crawled frequently.
Okay. What else do we got? PayPal, Pinterest.
Yeah. That's a lot of walking around money right there.
Is it worth it?
You know, I keep saying no, because like I keep like, okay, just for listeners, right? Like, is it worth the money? I haven't talked about it. And if you haven't read this story, you don't know how much money we're talking about here. PayPal has offered $45 billion. Now that's in shares, for Pinterest. That is a lot of money for Pinterest to me, in my opinion. However, when I read a little deeper into the analysis, and this is talked about over at Search Engine Journal. So when I read into the analysis, I'm like, you know, yeah, like PayPal's like pushing hard right now, right? On e-com, right? Makes perfect sense. Pinterest is expanding a little bit into e-com and is strong. What are they at? 400 million monthly active users. Like that's a lot strong. And when I started to actually think about it, I'm like, okay, that might still be a bit overvalued in my opinion. But that's my opinion. And the fine folks over at PayPal managed to get their own company worth $320 billion. So I'm sure they know what a billion is worth.
PayPal has been looking for a platform like this for years. Mm-hmm. And the fact that PayPal has been looking for a platform like this to try to become the e-commerce gateway, I think $45 billion might actually be a preliminary offer.
Well, we will soon see. And folks, we will keep you updated as we find out how many billions of dollars is Pinterest worth. But yeah, I do think it is going to be interesting. What I'm like, I can't, and maybe it's my, sort of limitation of I'm not heavily involved in social media in any way, shape, or form, right? I like Twitter. That's about it. So it might just be my short-sightedness in that area that isn't quite wrapping my brain around why the valuation, like where the revenue stream is in this potential acquisition. I get that Pinterest is doing some stuff to try and monetize better, but I don't quite see the valuation. But at the same time, I know that the fine folks at PayPal are not idiots, so I'm going to be really interested to see how much does it finally go for. But also, flash forward 6 months, flash forward a year, what does PayPal do with that? And do they end up killing it? Because we've seen that happen too.
I would put money on them killing it, actually. I hate to say it, but like... Yeah, but I think they're going to have they're going to try to laugh all the way to the bank whilst killing it. I don't think they're going to intend to kill it, but these are brilliant. Silicon Valley has proven itself to be incredible at engineering and craptastic at marketing.
Yeah.
So there's that. Okay, we are into the last 10 minutes. Quick warning. If you have the WordPerfect fastest cache plugin, got a million sites out there are running it, you could be wide open to site takeover and password leaks. Update it as fast as you possibly can.
That's the only advice you need on that one. Yep.
Actually, is it or is it not? Yes, if it's less than 0.9.5, update as soon as possible, and then you should be protecting yourself.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we were giving the official on that one.
What else? That I just caught earlier today, I
think it is worth, well, it was just published yesterday by Barry Schwartz. So thanks, Barry. There was a Google Analytics bug, and it's funny because I actually happened to be checking my analytics during that time and didn't know what it was. On the 18th, between about 7:30 and 8:30 a.m., there was a Google Analytics bug, and it resulted in unrecoverable data loss.
So, is that where everything from the 16th forward went? No, seriously, I was looking the other day, and it cut off on the 16th. And
you're referring to Search Console, are you?
Search Console, yeah.
No, this is in analytics. There was actually, your analytics data is, you've lost an hour that day. So if you see a drop that day, that's what it is. I know I've already annotated my analytics. I'm going to be annotating it again with some guesstimates. Like I'm going to be going back and going, okay, here's where the losses were. Here's sort of like what I can guesstimate it would have been. Based on the time frames around it, but just put an annotation on it so next year when you're doing your year over year analysis, you remember what it is, and you know when you're looking over time and see this day that has just a bit less traffic than maybe it should have. That's what it is. So just to make everybody aware, and it was interesting because I happened to be in there and I was like, oh, there must just be, I didn't even really process, there must be a real glitch. I was just like, oh, okay, something must be wrong on my end. But like, I didn't even think of like, oh, they're actually just not collecting data properly right now. Turns out that's what was going on. So, yeah.
This is kind of happening with frequency.
Yeah, complex systems are tough. unfortunately for them, they're dealing with also like mission critical core systems. But, you know, it at least they were able to identify it. This would be a spot where it'd be nice if they just dropped that annotation in for people automatically.
Well, then they did that on the August 24th where they lost a day of data, eh?
Yeah. So, and who knows, they may. Something I would be completely remiss to not bring up. Your friend of mine, he has been on our show. One of my favorite people in search, Frederick Dubu. Bing and Bing AI has announced that I'm not actually sure where he's going, but
he
didn't announce that part yet. Yeah, I know he's leaving Microsoft. I'm super, super excited to see where he does go. His sort of like, I found it sort of humorous, the way he wrote his sort of exit. And part of that story being he joined when he was 23 with sort of no big career goals or plans, and rightfully, and he called it there. He's like, I was 23. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like me at 23, right? Like, except I wasn't working for Microsoft, but it was just sort of like, well, I guess that's what I'm doing for now. And then 13 years later, he was still doing it. One of the prominent people in our industry doing it. He's now moving along, and I am going to be really excited to see where he goes, but I am sad to watch him leave because he was one of my favorite people at conferences. Really nice guy.
You know, well, for what it's worth, you're going to see him. Yeah, everybody we've known who's been in that position has landed on their feet and somehow remained involved in the search community. Jeremiah Andrick, Dwayne, and now Frederick. Okay?
So indeed, my only concern is he's also like super smart in AI, so he might just go off and work in that space instead. Either way, we'll all be watching. And you know what? Maybe next week we'll know, and we can talk about where he's going off to.
Absolutely. Okay, here's one that we shouldn't have to tell you. I don't even know why it's there, but somebody asked, so obviously people are wondering. If you set the link to open to a new window, what? Like, what did you expect? It opens to a new window. It doesn't do anything else, and it doesn't get you a ranking advantage at all. I don't even know why you thought it might, you stupid person.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what was going on with that, but at the same time, I try and be
you know what it is? Kind. Barry plants those stories for us. That's what it is.
That must be it. I blame Barry.
Like, every Thursday morning, he puts in something dumb just to see if we'll say it.
Yeah, he probably sits there. They did. I got my name on there one more time. One more thing. Like, I think we have time for one more story.
For sure. We got time.
Uh, One that I'm really, really loving right now, and this relates to video, and I've already started to like piece together some action items to work with, came out 9 hours ago on Search Engine Journal from Matt Southern. Google is automatically generating video chapters as a new source of metadata. So what we mean by that is historically, we would have to sort of put timelines in YouTube videos, right? Like that, which is a good thing. You sort of put the chapters of your YouTube video, and then those chapters were understood, and then you could rank for that chapter, right? We've all clicked on links, and it takes you to part of a video, or you'll see the search result page, and it's a YouTube video, and it has these annotation points throughout it.
T equals, and then the number in seconds.
Exactly. Well, now they're going to be doing that automatically and being able to surface sections of that content or of that video that might answer a specific subset of information that somebody should have. So if I'm asking a specific question that might not be annotated correctly because the video creator might not have known Dave's going to have this obscure question that's answered in this video, YouTube and Google are working to create those chapters and pull out those direct passages out of videos to be able to surface that content specifically. I think it's really, really exciting. And one thing, action item for folks, I'm going to be testing, and I'll keep people in the loop as to how this goes. I'm going to be creating a few different videos, and not for me, but for anyway, I'm going to be creating a few sample videos and annotating some questions, not annotating others, and then making sure that we're always clear in going like in enunciating basically what is X, and then going on to answer that and seeing does the annotation help or how good is Google at this, and should you basically just be making sure you're being really clear in what you're answering in each section, and then moving on, and can you start to surface a little more visibility in YouTube specifically. So I'll keep people posted on that one, but I think there's some great opportunities with YouTube being able to do that.
You know what you got to do to test the limits of this thing, especially around English language searches? You got to get like both Barry Adams and Frank Watson just wasted drunk. Give them a script to read, okay? And then have them do the same thing sober. I'd be curious. Did the Barry with his like big thick Irish accent, and then Frank with his, you know, this is where the alcohol comes in, because then he gets the Australian brogue coming out, right? I'd love to hear how Google treats that.
That's when you need a true English to English translator kicking in there.
If you could call that English, indeed. Absolutely. with all love Frank. Okay, we got time for one more. We can squeeze in one more story.
Okay, there's one more, and Pat hit Barry on this one from back on the 18th. Some new features rolling out. Looks like beta, so it doesn't look like they're actually rolling out yet, but they will be. Some new features at Google with some refinements, things to consider. Refine this search and broaden this search. So it's just some different features to allow people to quickly broaden a search that might be a little tighter. Like if you were looking up a specific battle from the Civil War, then being able to broaden that to the Civil War or wars in general. I just happened to use that as an example in an article I wrote. So using that, things to consider. So actually having some drop down like features and functions about a product or about your query, and then tightening up the queries or refining that. If you're talking about house painting, you know, going down to specific types of paint, things like that. So another big chunk of opportunities for us and things that we can look at to go, Google thinks that this is something I might want to have on that page that's about the top level content idea.
But I was just about to say that if you're not getting that on your pages, you still want to draw value from these features, type in the keywords that you're chasing down and look up what the competition's getting.
Right.
Start putting that content on your site. Like, put examples of that kind of content. Those are questions people are asking. Google is drawing that information off of your competition site for a reason.
Yep.
That it's there in the search results screen is a signal to you.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we're getting the signal from the studio that we've gone around the entire clock, and it's the top of the hour. So, first off, thank you very much to Brasco and the WMR Studios for producing this thing. And on behalf of Dave Davies from Beatstock Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media. Go get vaccinated. Just do it. I could give you this whole spiel on why you should, but I've been doing that for weeks. Just go do it. That's it. Rank well, be kind, be good to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.